देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 19 टेक्स 5 थ्रू 10। The verse on the board is 10 because 5 through 9 don't have purports. So I'll just read the translation. Well, let's do 10 and then we'll come back. Okay, verse number 10. Evam sanishchitya ripo shariram adhavato nirvivishe surendra स्वाशानिलान्तर्हित सूक्ष्मदेह तत्प्राणरन्ध्रेण विविघ्नचेतः एवं सनिश्चित्य रिपो शरीरम् आधावतो निर्विविशे सुरेन्द्र स्वाशानिलान्तर्हित सूक्ष्मदेह तत्प्राणरन्ध्रेण विविघ्नचेताः। एवं सनिश्चित्य रिपो शरीरम् आधावतो निर्विविशे सुरेन्द्र स्वाशानिलान्हर्हित सूक्ष्मदेहस् तत्प्राणरन्ध्रेण विविघ्नचेताः। word for word translation. Evam, in this way, Saha, he, Lord Vishnu, Nishchitya, deciding, Ripoho, of the enemy, Shariram, the body, Adhavata, who was running after him with great force, Nirvivishe, entered, Asura Indra, O king of the demons, Maharaj Bali, Swasha Anila, through the breathing, Antarhita, invisible, Sukshmadehaha, in his finer body, Tatpranarandhrena, through the hole of the nostril, Vivigna Chetaha, being very anxious. So we'll start from text 5 and come here so we get the context. So first of all, who's speaking? Who's speaking these verses? Lord Vamana, very good. Who is he speaking to? Bali Maharaj. And he spoke yesterday about, what is he speaking about in general? You come from an extremely fantastic lineage. And in all the kings in the lineage, there's one particular person who's glorified the most, and that is Prahlad. He's like the beautiful moon in the sky. Among all luminaries, the moon is the most beautiful, so he says, like the moon in the sky. He's continuing. It was in your dynasty that Hiranyaksha was born. Carrying only his own club, he wandered the globe alone, without assistance, to conquer all directions, and no hero he met could rival him. When delivering the earth from the Garbhodaka sea, Lord Vishnu, in his incarnation as boar, killed Hiranyaksha, who had appeared before him. The fight was severe, and the Lord killed Hiranyaksha with great difficulty. Later, as the Lord thought about the uncommon prowess of Hiranyaksha, he felt himself victorious indeed. When Hiranyakashipu heard the news of his brothers being killed, with great anger he went to the residence of Vishnu, the killer of his brother, wanting to kill Lord Vishnu. Seeing Hiranyakashipu coming forward bearing a trident in his hand like personified death, Lord Vishnu, the best of all mystics and the knower of the progress of time, thought as follows: wheresoever I go, Hiranyakashipu will follow me, as death follows all living entities. Therefore, it is better for me to enter the core of his heart, for then, because of his power to see only externally, he will not see me. And today's verse, Lord Vamanadev continued, O king of the demons, after Lord Vishnu made this decision, he entered the body of his enemy Hiranyakashipu, who was running after him with great force. In a subtle body inconceivable to Hiranyakashipu, Lord Vishnu, who was in great anxiety, entered Hiranyakashipu's nostril along with his breath. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is already in the core of everyone's heart. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hriddeshe Arjuna Tishthati. Logically, therefore, it was not at all difficult for Lord Vishnu to enter Hiranyakashipu's body. The word Vigna Chetaha, very anxious, is significant. It is not that Lord Vishnu was afraid of Hiranyakashipu. Rather, because of compassion, Lord Vishnu was in anxiety about how to act for his welfare. Om Jnana Timirandhasya ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः श्रीकृष्णचैतन्या प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि घोर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। The chapter is called The Lord Begs Charity from Bali Maharaj. Of course, I'm sure we've been discussing that the Lord doesn't need to beg anything from anyone. Why? Because He owns everything. He has no need for anything, outside of Himself. He is complete in and of Himself. And begging is an act of desperation, because there is no other means by which one can get something. So one has to beg. You don't see so much in America, because they're not allowed. You see them only during the holidays time. When you enter a grocery store, there are beggars who ring a bell and ask you for change. That's the only time between Thanksgiving and Christmas that people can tolerate a beggar. And they actually give something more so because they feel that's the right time to do something and give for others. As soon as Christmas is over, beggars vanish. The laws don't allow anyone to beg. You don't see them. But in India, it doesn't matter. Wherever you go, whatever time of the year, there's always some beggar. And the idea of begging is one from the beggar's side. They don't have other means by which they can earn a livelihood or even a bare subsistence. That's one. Second, it is to evoke in others a sense of compassion, a sense of giving. So there's some begging, of course. Now the begging is done in a way that people think of it as a nuisance, you know, because they're very insistent, they're persistent, they touch you, they poke you, they want something from you, because they're desperate. In this case, we should not consider Lord Vamana to be a common street beggar that we find during holidays. This is not that kind of begging. A Brahman receives charity. And the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas and Shudras must offer charity to a Brahmana. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita it said there's the right person at the right place at the right time. And the right thing must be offered. That is charity in the mode of goodness. From Bali Maharaj's side, because he's performing a yajna, the purpose of yajna is to give in charity. The Lord's names are chanted. The other brahmanas, they recite certain mantras that make it, that facilitate the giving of charity to go along with auspiciousness. Right? And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, charity that is offered to a wrong person at a wrong place without Vedic hymns is charity in the mode of passion or ignorance. So we need auspicious environment in which a king proclaims to everyone, I'm giving in charity. Now Bali Maharaj had usurped the kingdom of Indra, and there was no one who could fight him. So taking the kingdom back with the fight was impossible. That's one. Second, The Lord will not fight his own devotee. And the third is this whole pastime is for one purpose. And the purpose is? Glorify Bali Maharaj. He wants to show to the rest of humanity forever how glorious is this person called Bali, although coming from a what we call demoniac family, so it's called Asura family, yet inside him is hidden the devotee. So this is the whole pastime of unmasking the devotee. Because something we should appreciate, that the true nature of a person comes out in adversity. When there are difficult circumstances, that is when a person responds with one's true character. Until that adversity or challenge comes, a person can fake it. What's this phrase in America? Fake it till you make it. So you cannot fake it at the point of, you know, challenge. Until then, no problem. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would give the example that you can train a parrot to chant Hare Krishna. Right? And the parrot can very sweetly say, Hare Krishna, tweet, tweet, whatever, right? You can say it very well. But that very parrot, when attacked by a cat, although every day from morning till night will say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, as soon as it's attacked by a cat, it'll go, it forgets Hare Krishna. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would say, that is not how we should chant. That's an instruction for us, that our chanting, calling out to Krishna, when challenged, are we calling out to Krishna? It's just those moments, I'd like to call it the moments of truth. It is when our true character hits reality, or reality hits our true character. What comes out? His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj would do a demo and ask the devotees, if I were to take an orange and I would squeeze it, what would come out? Orange juice, right? Why would orange juice come out when I squeeze the orange? Because that's what is in it, correct? Similarly, when life squeezes us, what will come out? Depends on what's inside. If his inside is, you know, materialistic desire or something impure, when we are squeezed by life, that's what's going to come out. So our practice is to inculcate a character of a devotee such that when we are squeezed, that's what's going to come out. Devotional qualities will come out. When you squeeze an orange, you get orange juice. When you squeeze a devotee, figuratively, you get devotional qualities. It's one's character. So what's inside us is our daily investment. What am I putting inside? What's the character I'm awakening? What is it that I'm investing in my character such that when the test or tests come, and when will they come? They're coming at every moment. They're coming at us, they're hitting us. When those tests come, what's going to come out? And this is Bali Maharaj's example, that Lord Vamana is now beginning to make his life miserable. You'll see, as he's about to beg, first of all he's glorifying him. Oh, you come from such a dynasty, you come from such a lineage where there is no king who's never been uncharitable. Never. Very, very noble persons. And in fact, Bali Maharaj is part of your family, his grandfather. Prahlad Maharaj's son is Virochana. Virochana's son is Bali. Interestingly, Bali's son is Bana, who turned out to be a demon. Krishna killed Banasura. Actually, cut off all his arms and left him with two. Didn't kill him. is Banasura, because Bali Maharaj, Prahlad, they all came and said, please, you know, is the child in the family, you know, the brat, just let him go. So he's glorifying all these great kings. So they never said no to charity. And therefore now you, as Bali, are performing this yajna to give in charity, and here I am as a Brahmin. So you can never say no to a Brahmin. First of all, a Brahmin should not even ask. Not necessary. The Kshatriya should know what to give. In this case, the Brahmin is specifically asking, which is the peculiar thing. And what does a Brahmin need? Is going to come up. A Brahmin needs, Prabhupada says, land and cows. That's it. He doesn't need anything else. Land and cow. Therefore, you find all through Krishna book, the Brahmins were gifted cows or land. Cows or land. Because with that, they can survive. So he's going to ask for something. And he's going to ask for land. And he's not a greedy Brahmin. So perhaps I shouldn't take away the thunder from the story. No, but he's going to ask for something very meager. So before he asks Bali Maharaj, I want such and such from you, he's glorifying him. Look at your lineage. You should make your dynasty proud by giving unhesitatingly. Okay? So first he's saying, who's there in your dynasty? Hiranyaksha, that mighty fellow who with one mace gada club on his shoulder walked the entire universe alone, unchallenged, undefeated. He had this belt that said, what is that? Undefeated, unchallenged Hiranyaksha. Ladies and gentlemen, Hiranyaksha! And he would walk around the universe. And when he would walk, nobody would challenge him. So generally people walk with assistants, you know, armies. So they all help. This guy didn't need any army. Wow. He challenged all the demigods, crushed them. In fact, he dismantled the earthly realm from its orbit. It was not an easy thing to do. Fighting a demigod, fair, okay, relatively easy. Okay, fighting a demigod. Many demigods get beaten up to pulp and all that. That's fine. But to dismantle the entire earthly realm into the Garbhodaka ocean is not easy. Now when we say Bhumandala, there are different explanations for earthly realm. Sometimes it's said that the earth planet was immersed in the Garbha ocean. And sometimes Bhumandala means the entire solar system. Because Bhumandala is the solar system. All the way up to Pluto. Up to Uranus, sorry. So, imagine dismantling the entire solar system. It's not easy. One guy has that power. And his power is such that for him, the Lord had to incarnate. Nowadays we have many demons. The Lord doesn't need to incarnate for anyone. Because they're too small, insignificant. He doesn't even have to say, they just look at them and they're done. But for Hiranyaksha, he had to appear as a boar incarnation to bring out the whole earthly realm back and put it back in orbit. Because why is that important? Why is the earthly realm important? Who cares? In the entire universe, which is this massive thing that's 4 billion miles in diameter, of which the earth is like the most insignificant planet. But why is it important that he had to restore it? Why? In general. Very good. Very good. In the entire Vedic system, it is the human form of life that is given the most importance. Because it is that human form of life is the only life form in which you can finish and not create more karma. Or said it more generally, it's the human form of life in which we generate more karma for ourselves. As animals, we exhaust it, or sort of we go through our bad karma. Animals don't create karma for themselves. The demigods, they don't create karma. They're only living the good karma. They're exhausting the good karma. So once we exhaust good karma, you go for vacation, you go for have a good time, you do this and you have fun, where do you have to come back? To Chicago. I mean the earthly realm. You go down to any animal life, insect, bird, worm, reptile, whatever. You exhaust that karma, you come back to human form of life. And that's the deciding form, what happens after. So Hiranyaksha dismantled this very basis, that if the earthly realm is not there, all living entities have no place to come back to live out their karma and become devotees and become liberated. Very, very critical part of the earth, of the universe, and that's why it's right at the middle of the universe. Very critical part. All Vedic ceremonies are done here. Human life, the Lord appears here. And human life decides what happens next. If there is no place, karma bhumi, if there is no place, then how will the human beings go back to Godhead? Therefore, it's very important. And Hiranyaksha challenged that one. So when Varahadev came, in the third canto we hear the fight between Varaha and Hiranyaksha. And the fight was very, very tough fight. It was so tough that after killing Hiranyaksha, Vamanadev, you know, assessed the damage. He did a little assessment and he said, indeed, it was a good victory. Because killing, you know, if you have a very weak opponent, the fight's not even a fight, it's fun. It's like, whatever. And in front of Krishna, everyone is nobody. For example, Jarasandha, we hear in Krishna book, Jarasandha did not like Krishna because Jarasandha and Shishupal, they were friends. And Krishna had kidnapped and insulted Shishupal, or I should say this way, Shishupal felt insulted because imagine, it's his wedding, he's all decked up, all the groomsmen are there, all the great kings from the land have gathered, and someone kidnaps the bride. Like, come on, Krishna kidnapped Rukmini right from the wedding place. And it's not like he kidnapped her a few days before, you know, then he could have cancelled the wedding or something. It happened at the moment the wedding was about to begin. She was walking down the aisle, literally, once, and then he kidnapped her. And he did it in such speed and gusto that by the time people figured out what was going on, Krishna had already gone with Rukmini. So Shishupal became very angry. You can understand why. And he was in hot pursuit. You know the story. Shishupal was defeated. Rukmini was defeated. And so this grudge that he bore towards Krishna. And because Jarasandha was his friend, you know, when someone attacks our friend, then we also carry the same animosity. You did like that to my friend. You're not my friend anymore. So Jarasandha's envy became so fed that he attacked Krishna with 17 Akshauhinis of armies. So just in terms of size, the entire Mahabharata war was fought with 18 Akshauhinis, 7 on Pandava's side, 11 on the Kaurava's side. And somewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada lists out what is one Akshauhini. I forget, some 27,000 elephants, double the amount of infantry and then cavalry. There's a whole list. Times 7, times 11. This guy came alone with 17 Akshohinis. Krishna decimated everybody single-handedly. And Jarasandha came back. Krishna did it again. How many times did Jarasandha come back? 17 times. So many armies Krishna decimated like that, single-handedly. But when he fought Hiranyaksha, Krishna said, good fight. That was a good fight. So you can imagine how powerful Hiranyaksha was. Then when Hiranyaksha was killed, Hiranyakashipu became very angry because his brother was killed, his twin. And then he had this vendetta. Yeah, I have to kill Vishnu. Can you imagine the guts this guy has to even think, I have to kill Vishnu? So first of all, he's not a blind, foolish fellow. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu are sons of Kashyapa. Now, Kashyapa is a very, very learned sage. And these people are not illiterate. They've gone through Vedic studies throughout their childhood. And part of Vedic studies is they've heard about Vishnu because they're sons of Kashyapa. They're cousins or half-brothers of Indra. Kashyapa had two wives, actually more than two, but two, Diti and Aditi. You know this, right? So sons of Aditi are Indra and all the great demigods. They're called the Adityas. And on this side are the Diti and her progeny. And they're called the Daityas. So, imagine at home what kind of discussions must be going on about Vishnu if Kashyapa Muni is there. All great sages must be visiting their home. Narada, Angira, etc. They all must be visiting. They all must be talking about Vishnu, talking about the glories of Vishnu and how Vishnu killed all these demons and how powerful he is. And there is this one fellow who says, I want to kill Vishnu. Knowing who Vishnu is. So he has the guts. Now we cannot have the guts to say, I'm going to kill such. Our talk was considered, you know, childish babble or whatever. This guy has the power and he took it as a vendetta. I'm going to kill Vishnu. And he gave Vishnu such a chase. Vishnu started considering, man, if I don't stop this guy, he's going to pursue me throughout the universe. He had his power, he could go anywhere. Suppose we are trying to kill someone, which we're not trying to, imaginarily, okay? And if the person we're trying to kill or take revenge from moves to the Bahamas or the Fiji Island, there's no way we can get there. It's like, okay, man, he left Chicago, I can't do anything about it. He's hiding in Fiji Island or somewhere in Siberia, then we say, it doesn't happen unless, you know, you're this assassin that you want to pursue and kill. And of course, like we read in the novels and stuff, even that is difficult. This guy can go anywhere in the universe. So it doesn't matter whether Vishnu goes to Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapuloka, Sutala, Atala, doesn't matter. Hiranyakashipu can pursue him. So he's a very formidable enemy. So Vishnu considered what to do. The best thing is, if he doesn't even know where I am, then he doesn't have a place to go. And so Vishnu appeared in his subtle body. Of course, everything about Vishnu is subtle. But this subtle body is, here it says, what's the word? It says, Adhavato. He was being chased or pursued by Hiranyaksha. He says, Sukshma Deha. So in Sanskrit, gross body is called Sthula Deha. And Sthula Deha, exactly, because it contains stool. And Sukshma means subtle. Subtle means that which cannot be perceived by the eyes, the nose, the ears, tongue, skin, can't. For example, bacteria. They exist. We can't see them unless you have a very magnifying microscope. You can't see. The ordinary eye cannot see bacteria. So how did Vishnu enter his heart? He says through tat pranarandhrena, through the nostril. Pranarandhra, randhra means hole or cavity, and pranarandhra is the cavity through which we breathe in for being alive. So Vishnu entered, I don't want to say like bacteria, but in an invisible form. Because when we breathe, we are ingesting all these living creatures that are in their subtle form. Of course, they have a gross body, which is just that we cannot see. Then what to speak of subtle? Air is subtle, for example. It's a gross entity. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. And yeah, so these five are called the gross material elements. But from earth, as you go up, they become in gradients, they become subtler. Then subtler than ether is, come on, Bhagavad Gita students, mind. Subtler than the mind is intelligence. Subtler than the intelligence is false ego. Subtler than false ego is soul. Subtler than the soul is super soul. So subtlety means finer, more difficult to perceive by one's gross senses. We can perceive earth because all five senses can perceive earth. The main characteristic of earth is that it has form, smell, very good, punyo gandha prithivyam. So the main characteristic is fragrance or smell, but it also has form, it has taste, it has sound. When you come to fire, going back one step, fire has form, because you can see it. Fire has sound. Very good. So before fire, between earth is water. Sorry. Thank you. Water. So water has form. Water has taste. Water has sound. You can touch it. But no smell. So you go back one, and one particular sense object reduces. The fire has form, fire has sound, fire has touch, but no taste. I mean, I don't know, there is no taste. There are some persons who go and they taste fire, maybe they taste petrol or gasoline, but whatever it is, kerosene. It has no taste and it has no smell. By the time you come to air, it has no taste, it has no smell and no form. But it has touch. When you move your hand, you can touch. But you see, it's getting subtler. So by the time it comes to air, you can't see, because the form's not existing in a way that we can see. So our senses in gradations start failing because these elements become finer. So you come to ether or space. Except sound, nothing else exists in ether. No form, no taste, no smell, no touch. These are all gross still. Now you come to mind, our five senses fail. You can't see, you can't touch, taste, smell the mind. What to speak of intelligence? and false ego, for example. So existence of it is only in experience, yeah, by indirect experience. So Vishnu took a form that Hiranyakashipu's senses, mind and intelligence could not perceive, and he entered through his nostril to enter his heart and stayed there. So Hiranyakashipu was like, where's Vishnu? Did you see him? Where is Vishnu? So that search in one sense made him Krishna conscious. Prabhupada says that Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, the very Krishna conscious. But what's the difference between them and a devotee? Even a devotee is trying to be Krishna conscious. Hiranyakashipu is also Krishna conscious. But what's the difference? Very good, thank you. The definition of pure devotional service is when we are being Krishna conscious in a way that is favorable to Krishna. Anukulyena. Krishna Anushilana. The cultivation of Krishna consciousness in a mood that is favorable to Krishna is pure devotional service. So Hiranyakashipu became Krishna conscious. Where is Krishna? Where is he? Where is he? Where is Vishnu? He was obsessed with the thought of Vishnu. Fantastic, huh? I wish we were. But it's just the favorably though. He was in a very unfavorably. I want to kill him. If I see him, kill him. Now, the catchphrase in the verse is Vivigna Chetaha. Vigna means anxious or disturbed. Right? In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nirvigna Mana, one whose mind is not disturbed. So, Vigna Cheta means Vishnu's consciousness, Vishnu's mind was agitated, was disturbed. And was Vivigna, very disturbed. Now why should Vishnu come very disturbed? He's always peaceful, equipoised. So Prabhupada explains that his disturbance or his anxiety was not on account of his own, I guess, safety or his own needs. His anxiety was out of compassion. Poor Hiranyakashipu. Look at him. He has this vengeance in his heart. And if I appear to him, then that vengeance will get even more fed. So, what should I do such that his heart is calmed? This is compassion. This is service attitude, even towards the enemy. What can I do? By my existence, sometimes it happens that when someone is disturbed with us, or let's put ourselves in the disturbed category, it's better that way. When we are disturbed because of someone else, their mere existence can bother us. The fact that they're breathing is bothering us. Why are they there? And they haven't said or done anything to us. They're just breathing and we are upset. I wish they stopped breathing. This, and Vishnu's thinking, boy, just by my existence, it's causing him problem. What to do? So because we are practicing devotees, when we are the cause of agitation for someone else, what to do? We can't stop breathing. What to do? So this is the anxiety that Vishnu had. What can I do such that his anxiety is reduced? Just don't show ourselves to, none of us has the capacity to become subtle and enter through someone's nostril. If we try them, we can't. So become invisible, means try to move away from their vision for some time so it doesn't bother them. If you can. Now if it's the same household, husband and wife, I don't have a solution. If it's the same ashram, two brothers living in the same room, I have no solution. You know, figure out in a way that you cause the least anxiety into another entity. No, just by our existence, we are cause of anxiety for other living beings. Right? If there is a bug in the room, and you're also in the room, and you walk towards the bug or the fly, isn't the fly going to become anxious? Yeah, of course. Even a mouse, although they bother us very much, if we're in the same room, you know, of course, here they've become very strong, they don't care. But generally, by normal characteristic, any living entity is scared. Oh, some other predator is there, some other entity, my life is in danger. So our existence may cause anxiety onto others. So we have to find out what's the best way. I mean, there may be trial and error. We try this, they get upset. We try that. Oh man, this didn't work. Of course, we can talk to them directly and say, what's the thing I can do that will cause you the least anxiety? But the point is, even the thought, the compassionate thinking of what is it that I can do that I cause the least anxiety to others is what makes a Vaishnav thoughtful. It's called Manishi. So we consider, Vishnu is considering, he's showing us. Even Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's supremely independent, from whom, by whose name fear personified is afraid, is agitated. Let me see how I don't cause any anxiety or disturbance to Hiranyakashipu, who's out there to kill me. And Vishnu knows no one can kill him. Even if someone tried, they cannot kill him. So he was not callous. No one can kill me. I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. No, compassion in the heart said, please let me see what I can do. Just so that Hiranyakashipu, although full of animosity and vengeance, I don't feed it more. Very sweet, huh? Very sweet. So now we're all tiny Hiranyakashipus roaming the universe. I don't think we are conscious that we want to kill Vishnu, but we're competing with Vishnu by taking things that belong to him and using them. So Vishnu is equally anxious about us, although the disturbance we cause is very small in the grand scheme of things, yet he's sitting in the heart because he can't be directly perceived by us. We don't know how to tolerate that. Until we transform, then he shows himself. Until then, he's hiding in the heart as Paramatma and guiding. So we are also micro Hiranyakashipus, MHK, micro Hiranyakashipu. There's more to the pastime, but I don't want to take away whoever is speaking tomorrow, their thunder. So any questions, comments? Instructive, no? Just one thought of Vivigna Cheta, just that anxiety, is so instructive. Yes, Prabhu.
In terms of hiding himself, I'm wondering, I mean, I thought, well, it's possible he could hide himself by not being anywhere near him. I think that's also possible. Yet he hides himself from us, but still wants to associate with us.
He wants to give us his association. Yes.
Right. So he's doing it secretly.
He's doing it secretly. Absolutely, as Paramatma, guiding us secretly.
Because we can't admit.
Oh, no, we can't. There's a story, Prabhupada? I don't know if Prabhupada quoted, because I haven't heard Prabhupada say directly. But there's a story that there's this prodigal son or daughter, however you want to take it, becomes angry with the parent and storms out of the house. I don't want to be with you. I don't like you. Walk away. and just goes out and walks a few miles, becomes hungry, and finds a coconut vendor, and is thirsty, so wants some coconut water. And the coconut wala says, "Oh, you want some coconut? Sure, here." He says, "I don't have any money." "No, no problem. It's okay." "Oh, thank you very much." Continues walking. A few hours later, is hungry again, finds a restaurant. The restaurateur goes to him and says, "I'm very hungry." "It's okay, eat." "But I don't have any money to pay." "Oh, no problem, it's free lunch." "Huh? Really?" And so the son starts to think, "I don't need my parent anymore. Because there are people who are giving it to me for free, or I can work and, you know, there's employment." So then, as he goes during the day, he finds he gets everything for free. So he goes back to them saying, "You don't know me. I'm a complete stranger. Why are you giving everything for free?" They said, "Because your parent called and said you'll be hungry and we should not charge you. So they gave their credit card over the phone. We took care of it. So you don't have to pay." Oh, similarly, Paramatma is like that. We don't understand that we have walked away from that relationship, but our needs are being fulfilled. The fact we can breathe and be alive, there is food always. It's not like a shortage of food. Even if the planet says we're short of food, somehow we're never hungry. We never go to sleep hungry. Yeah, and we have other facilities because he's silently helping us. So the point of the human life is to go from that silent helping to an active relationship of exchange. That's why he does it as Paramatma. Because in the spiritual world, there is no need for him to hide in anyone's heart. So he's not, there's no Paramatma in the spiritual world. He's not in the heart of the soul. He's not there. That expansion of Paramatma is not needed. Because everyone can see Krishna and they lovingly and want to see him and be with him. Here, no. So he's hiding. We're too competitive with him. We don't want him. So the word is called Dvesha. You've heard this word in Bhagavad Gita, Dvesha. Dvesha means envy. Right? So the breakup of the word is Isha means the Lord or controller, and Du is two. Two Lords together is not possible. So Dvesha is this competition to be the Lord. That's called Dvesha. Two Lords cannot be, so always competing to be the Lord, the controller, the master. It's called Dvesha.
I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit about the significance of understanding the material world, like you were saying, the material elements. And in the Bhagavatam, I find in like the first second canto for sure, and third canto.
Oops. Sorry, please forgive me. And the third canto
talks a lot about the creation, like Lord, yeah. Like it comes to Lord Brahma a lot, talking about how Lord Brahma created the material world, universe. I'm wondering, what is the significance of understanding the material universe, and how much should we try to understand it?
According to Jiva Goswami, if we understand the process by which we are here, so then reversing it is easier. The fact that we have this false ego says, "I am this body," or "I want to enjoy life separate from Krishna." That thought, that identity that I am not a servant of Krishna. That's called false ego, right? True ego is I am servant of Krishna. Prabhus, let it be, we'll take care of it later. So I am not servant of Krishna equals I am equal to Krishna, or I am competing with Krishna. Correct? That ego, that I am not servant of Krishna, manifests certain consequences. And that consequence is that to be able to live that identity, that I am not servant of Krishna, or I am equal or master myself, the consequence is that the soul now becomes covered by the shadow energy called Maya. And Maya has to now manifest in both subtle and gross forms to convince of that identity that I am not a servant of Krishna. Okay? Now the subtle is that that false ego needs mind and intelligence, because these are important functions. Even the soul has mind and intelligence, but it has spiritual mind and spiritual intelligence. So the counterpart of that is material mind, material intelligence. Spiritual senses, material senses. Exactly the same set, just instead of pure spiritual energy, it is now material energy. And this material energy is within the purview of time. So there is a beginning and an end, birth and death. So when we are here and we study how material creation happens, how the soul then entrapped in a subtle and gross body is then trapped in the womb of the mother, and all the difficulty it has to go through to come back to life and live with suffering, old age, disease, death, goes back, any person will look and say, how foolish, I'm just doing the same thing again and again and again and again. Why can I stop this? So it's described that that creation has two purposes. One is purification, and second is rectification. So to rectify our consciousness, and second is a way and means to get out of it. So it's important to know. And if you notice the Bhagavatam, it doesn't matter who it is, every person who's talking to their guru, whether it is Devahuti speaking to Kapila, whether it is Vidura speaking to Maitreya, whether it is Parikshit Maharaj speaking to Shukadeva Goswami, although it's not so directly said there, in all the pages of Bhagavatam, the first question they ask is, how does the external energy Maya work? The question, you're in front of the incarnation of the Lord, why do you care for that question? Because it has great value, not only for themselves but for others. How does it work? Because that's the only relatable topic. If they say, how do pure devotees operate? I mean, it's a nice story, but we have no context because we're not there. So the questions are all in the context of where we are. So sometimes devotees say, suppose you're driving somewhere, okay? Of course, now we have GPS, but even still, it's still valid. You're lost. You call someone, I am lost. The first question they will ask you is, where are you? They won't say, where are you going? I say, where are you? Say, I'm at the corner of Haight and Ashbury. Okay. So, where to get somewhere, it's first important to know where we are. And from there, then we want to know where to go to. So then there is a pathway to where we are. Unless we appreciate why, appreciate in a sense that, oh my gosh, look at me. I'm entrapped in matter so badly, so entrenched in matter. how to get out of here. So where are you? I'm here, deep down somewhere. Therefore, it's important.
Krishna Prabhu, thank you for a class. You have made a lot of excellent points. Can you just tell the devotees one story? I remember when you, I thought you were going to say it today, but when you were mentioning what comes in, what's in comes out in circumstances, and I thought you were going to mention, I'm not going to give it away, but the story of the language person.
I've said this story so many times. I intentionally skipped it. In the court of King Akbar, the Mughal emperor who ruled over India for many, many, many years, he had 9 ministers. They were called the 9 jewels. And among them, the most prominent was Birbal. You know, the very intelligent, practical intelligence, not just intelligent, but superlatively practical intelligent. Practical intelligence. So one day, a person showed up at the king's court and said, I am an expert in all languages of the world. And I'm so expert that I have perfectly mastered the accent, the intonation, the context, the colloquial uses of words, the slangs as well. But I challenge anyone in your court to be able to tell, you know, what my native tongue is, what's my original language. And so King's court had all these experts in all these languages, so they questioned him, you know, historically, slang wise, because, you know, if you have a particular language, if you don't know the slang, then it's a giveaway, right? You know, like if Spanish, if you don't know how to say comastas and you don't say it the right way, they're like, ah, who are you? So he was so expert, so they questioned him in all angles of any language. It was perfect, and they were like, we can't tell. And if you know certain, you know, if you meet someone from Boston and they speak, you know, they have a Boston way of speaking. If you meet someone from New York, you know how they speak. You meet someone from Alabama, you know how they speak. So you can tell, hey, I know you. Right? But this guy was so good, that none of them. Only Birbal had not tried him out. So Akbar went to Birbal and say, you know, my court is going to get insulted if, you know, this is the emperor's court. Do something. He said, I need a few days. Okay, fine. Take you a few days. So Birbal said to the servants in the palace, give this guy the best room, you know, Ritz-Carlton luxury. Give him the best things. 2 days later, in the court, Birbal said, my dear king, this guy is from Boston, or whatever he is, picked up his language. And everyone was like, oh, how did you know? How did you know? Even that guy was shocked. He said, my gosh, how did you find out? Even Akbar's like, oh, you have to tell me, this is something, you didn't challenge him, how did you know? So Birbal said, we gave him the best room. So naturally, he's so comfortable that he's in deep sleep. Right? You're in deep sleep and you're very comfortable. And I told the servants that at 2 a.m., okay, in the dead of night, when this guy is so comfortably asleep, you give him the ice bucket challenge. You pour cold water on him, and the language in which he yells out, that is his language. He curses in some line. He will swear in a particular line. That is this. Because at that time of challenge, that's what's going to come out. That's what's going to come out. So it's like, wow. So Birbal knew. That's the thing we're talking. That when we are pushed to the wall, what comes out? That's the level of Krishna consciousness we have. We may feign it, fake it, talk big, whatever. When we're pushed to the wall by Krishna, what comes out, that's where we are. So I'm sorry to inform you, I'm way down there, but that's where it is. So we're here to, you know, invest in our inner character of being a devotee of Krishna. Okay, I have other duties to take care of. It has been a very long time since I've come and done Bhagavatam class here. So, feels very nice. Thank you for receiving me. And thank you for sharing and inspiring me. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Please forgive me, I made a mess here. If I clean it up here. I need a bib. I can take care of it. I need a bib also because this is too. Thank you.